Jesus didn't have a problem with people that's in the streets. He had a problem with religious people.
How can I help anybody when I'm not even, when I was not even able to help my own son?
I would never do that. I would never do that. And I became that in a matter of minutes when they took my pain pills away.
And I said, I'm not where I want to be, but thank God I'm not what I used to be.
Ugh. This is Faith in Your Recovery. I am Randy Davis. Welcome to the battle. Thanks for joining us today on Faith in Your Recovery. We look forward to your participation. Get a hold of us with a question or a comment. We'd love to address it. Our guest today comes to us from the Marion area, John Humphreys. Welcome, John.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Good to have you back. Folks can go dig up your story from before. We're going to take a little different approach today. This is one of our Beneath the Wound episodes where we're just hitting with some questions that aren't your typical, how did it happen, what did you go through, but that's going to be thrown in, I know, and that's great. But we look forward to your responses, and we recognize and realize some of these are your experience, some of them are your opinions. We respect that both ways. I'm not here to debate it, here to get a different point of view. We recognize that there's no one way to recovery. Maybe I shouldn't say we. Do you agree with me, John? You think there's more than one way to recovery?
I mean, yeah, recovery, yeah. I think there's only one way to freedom.
I agree with that, and I'm sure we'll hit on who that is here in just a little bit. But we welcome your input and look forward to it. Let's go back to your early days. I don't know. Remind me and our folks again, when did your addiction issues begin? How old were you, John?
I mean, I was probably late teenager. Okay. But as soon as I started drinking, like anything I tried something, I was— you know, then I was just trying to try, you know, mess with it all the time, whether it was weed, alcohol, to acid. That's kind of where it started. So just trying to find a place to fit in.
You were all in when you opened it or started.
Yeah, yeah. That's kind of my personality even now. So just wanted more, you know, of everything.
So prior to that, let's go with your early teen years. Mm-hmm. Were you a leader or a follower in your mind at that time?
Oh, I don't— I mean, I looking back, I was a follower, you know, so I don't know what I don't know what I believed. I just know the truth is I was trying to— I think I was trying to fit in. So we always were always trying to get accepted by this group or be funnier. Whatever, you know, and I think when I would use, you know, whether it was weed or alcohol or even when we did the acid, I just thought, you know, it made my personality better, made it easier to talk to girls, that kind of stuff, you know.
Okay, so do you believe in addiction as a disease or as a choice?
Oh, Randy, you didn't warm me up at all, so we're just going in, huh?
We're jumping, buddy.
I believe, from my experience, I think in most situations, it is a choice that leads to a disease. I mean, I think that's what I would call it. You know, I made a choice, and then one day I woke up and, you know, I was addicted.
You realize that it wasn't a choice at that point. It was a necessity.
Yeah, so
at
least
to your mind, heart, and spirit.
Yeah, completely dependent, physically, mentally. So
yeah, I have always called it a disease set up by a choice.
Yeah.
That I can guarantee you there will be no addiction if you never use. If you never give it the drug that tried, you will never be addicted to it. As simple as that may seem. So define addiction. How do you define addiction?
I mean, I think when something has taken control of your life, I don't know if that's the clinical, you know, definition, but for me, addiction was like I was losing control of things that I should have been in control of, you know, and eventually it turns into it's bondage. You know, and torment, and it just, it takes over everything. I was thinking about that on the way here, you know, because we talked, and this, being here in Anderson, this is kind of where my, you know, substance use was at its worst. And it's just, you know, when I'm driving here, I remember, like, it's just, it was just constant torment.
Was there a, did you sense any feelings of triggers on the way here? You know, driving that old path, going to where so much had taken place.
No, no, I'm on an assignment now. You know what I'm saying? And in that, like, I know what I'm called to do. And I, like, I know, and I remember, like, not having control and being in complete bondage. And I don't want that life back. So there's not, I don't want to say that I don't have triggers or whatever, but I don't, there's not temptation to go back to that. I'm almost 13 years in on this. You know, and I have my daughters depending on me. I have people depending on me. So we're just on a mission. I don't have time. I don't have the time to stop.
What is that mission, John? Share that with our folks. Well, I know you well enough to know.
Well, I mean, I think that, like, you know, we have a lot of things that we're working on, and God has entrusted us with. And I mean, the mission, like, it's constantly changing, but we're trying to help people get the message out there that Jesus Christ saves. And that's what I was talking about with freedom. Like, I'm not, you know, there's sobriety, there's recovery, and then there's freedom in my world.
Sure.
So I love to hear people's testimonies, and we've worked really hard, kind of, you know what I mean, kind of starting when I met you and saw the A Better Life Brianna's Hope set up. It was like this, but just, like, you know what I mean, like, spread, you know, spreading it intensely. And that's what I'm passionate about. And I have, Jesus Christ has done something in my life. He's restored. He's given me new life. And, like, my assignment, my biblical assignment, is to tell the world about that.
Okay. Here's a question I don't know that I've ever asked before. If so, it was your old buddy Brian Blevins that I asked. Okay, so
do I get to phone a friend on this? Can I call Brian if I need to?
Yeah, we'll give you that, all right? Do you believe recovery is choice or disease-controlled? We're talking about addiction being a disease. Is recovery... Is your choice more powerful than the disease at that moment, or how do you see it?
I think that's going to be different for everybody. Like, if you look at it, and what it is that spurs or gets people to start the change or start that path of recovery, it's so different for everybody. So that question itself, I think everybody could answer it, you know, individually. As I was so, like, for me, I was so broken. I did not want to live anymore. I didn't know when I was going to see my kids anymore. I was tired of being enslaved to methadone and fentanyl patches and just having to have all of these things to function. I was so tired of myself that I called out to a God that I didn't believe in. And whether that, you know, however that answers your question for me, that's what it took. And then pressing into that and showing up and going through, allowing yourself to be held accountable and working through the wounds and understanding your weaknesses and letting people into your life to speak into those and against those, because we have pride too. So letting people speak, you know, speak into your life and call you out, you know, strengthening a prayer life, getting to understand and read the Bible. That's what it took for me. For some people, it may be more, you know, of a, like, a medical situation, like somebody had, you know, when I had a heart attack and got a stent in, there's some medications I had to take to make sure that stent held and nothing stuck to it. Like, it was a part of the process of, I don't want to say healing, but recovering, right? And so I think it can be the same thing.
So how long was that darkness? How long was that struggle between the time you started toward recovery to the time you found Christ? How long of a period are we talking, John?
I was in active addiction around probably 17 years. I don't know when it started. I think that I don't know if it started when I first started drinking. I don't know when I was completely trapped. I know when I got on pills, you could tell because you would get sick if you didn't have them. But as far as like the recovery process to the salvation, I encountered Christ before any of the other stuff. I've learned all that since. The recovery stuff, the certifications, those things. I've learned that. That's all post Jesus Christ encounter, So he was my first introduction to freedom, sobriety, recovery, whatever you want to call it. I wanted to be done. I wanted so bad. I wanted so desperately to be done, but it's not that easy. And that's why you see people, struggle with it. It's not that easy to just be like, I'm done. I'm walking away from it. That's not how it works most of the time. You've got to have something.
Do you have relapses? Relapses in your background?
No. There's no relapses in my background on substances. But when I'm walking out my faith, there's things with lust or dating. I've had lapses in judgment there, several. Sometimes with my diet, like I have failed, and I think sometimes like I can say that I haven't relapsed proudly, but that's not really true in the life that I'm trying to walk. I've had failures and I've had lapses, and I went back to the old life that Jesus Christ freed me from. And maybe I haven't gotten high, maybe I haven't had drinks and things like that.
What? I'm searching for the best words to use here. When you're going backwards in your faith, that's kind of what you're saying there. Is that normal? Is that just our human nature? And I'm not writing it off, but yeah. Is it possible to reach out to Christ in a pure, total, and full way without those moments?
I would like to believe it is. It's not my, like, I don't know that. Like, I haven't experienced that. In my failures, I have to go running back to God, and maybe I have to stay humble. And for me to stay a humble servant to Christ, I've got to, I have to fail. Now, I made those decisions. I don't even want to blame Satan or the enemy. Like, I've made decisions that have put me in situations where I have to step back from things, where I have to refocus. But the one thing I know is, like, I have woke up in panics before when I feel like I'm getting distant from God. And I think that if you were to talk to Brian and some of the other people that have experienced some of this long-term freedom, that's the one thing we have in common is like with me, I may veer off from time to time, but when I come, like I panic when I wake up and I realize I don't feel God in my life whatsoever. It is scary to me.
I'm going to say on my behalf, I've told you before, I've told our listeners before, I don't come from an addiction background, but I've suffered through those same moments you're mentioning there. My strongest desire is to be the me Jesus created me to be. And in that effort, there are times I know I've failed. There are times I don't, quote, feel as close to him as before. And I know I'm not. I'm either not in his word, or I'm not on my knees, or I'm not experiencing him. And I am not going to give Satan any credit for that. Mm-hmm. I'm not one who believes that the mistakes we make, the sins we commit, the errors that, our lives are filled with, that he gets credit for that. That's Randy's fault, not Satan's credit. Is my stance on that.
Yeah.
How do you see recovery? Is it a moving target, or is it an absolute touchable goal?
Oh, I mean, I think the way that we're looking at recovery now is like it's taking steps towards freedom, maybe abstinence, like whatever it is, like it's taking one step at a time. Any improvement, this is the definition. This isn't necessarily how I operate with my circle, right? But so in that sense, the definition would be like recovery is just doing something to improve your situation, right? And if that's the case, I mean, that would make it a never-ending journey, which would make it a moving target. I personally, when it comes to that, I would hope that the ultimate goal is freedom, sobriety, like, you know, nothing, you know, with no assistance. However, everybody has to walk this out differently, and we get into these arguments about what is sobriety and recovery. And I understand, you know, like, I understand both sides. I know that I want the people that I work with to experience complete freedom, you know, but they have to, the journey there, the walk there can look a lot different for people, you know? So recovery is a, like recovery as the way that it is designed and talked about now is I am taking steps, doing something to do better today than I was doing yesterday, or not falling back to where I was yesterday.
So can you reach recovery without the freedom of connecting with, that comes with the connecting with Christ?
Oh, you can find recovery with, you know, the truth is like it, the way that it's defined, you can find recovery in a lot of different ways. Freedom, I believe the thing about freedom is, I encountered something that gave me peace that doesn't make sense. And I encountered something that gave me the strength to walk away from the methadone bottle and the patches and everything like that and not look back. I encountered something that gives me peace past this life. I encountered something that introduced me, like we talk about death to life. That's what I encountered. And it's not a life thing in my flesh right now. This vessel that I'm in will die and I will still live eternally. That is freedom, right? That's not in a lot of these other programs and everything like that. So there is a difference. And I'm respectful of every walk that people, you know, that people take. I'm respectful of everybody's journey. I will walk with you, you know, like I don't care, you know, your belief system. I don't care any of that stuff. I don't care what you're on right now. I will walk it out with you if you're trying. If you have the desire, if you have the desire to be honest and try, I will walk it out with you.
But, I like the word you were using there. You're respectful of those. That's not a matter. We don't have to agree or disagree. You know, we have what works for us. We have what we understand as far as Christ and our walking with Him. There's going to be a difference. That's okay as long as He's okay with it, is my thinking here. What are some of the misconceptions we have about recovery, other than to the point of freedom, okay? So when people are expecting recovery, what are some of our misconceptions?
Do you mean like a family member?
Anybody.
I think sometimes if like family or your loved one, you're like, okay, I've got them into treatment. Yay, it's over. It's not over. You know what I mean? And
sure.
I understand like I understand their thinking because we work with a lot of people in that situation and they need hope, you know? And if it's the same thing with like, oh, if I can just get them to church, they can come to church They're not. The people can come to church and they're not going to necessarily leave followers of Christ. And it's the church in America, you got, a slimmer chance that, you know, somebody's going to go to church and come out on fire for Jesus. In recovery, it's the same kind of thing. Well, they're going to go to detox. Well, yes, that's a victory. They go to jail for a while. You know, there's victory in that. Like, they're sobering up. They're clean. You know what I mean? But I think the misconception of recovery is when you're on the outside looking in, it's like, why don't you just stop? And then it's like, okay, I'll send you to detox. We'll send you to detox. We'll send you to inpatient treatment. We'll get you some outpatient treatment. Then it's over. But it's not. Yeah, it's not. Because even like then when you go through those processes and you can pour everything into it and you can go to your AA and you can go to your NA and you can work your steps, you can go to church, you can do all of these things. There's still a process. There's still feelings that you have to, and all of those things together will work on that. You know, but you're not coming out like you may be expecting your family, your loved one to walk out of those doors all cleaned up, ready to go, you know, fresh shaven, like, you know, ready to tackle life and get a job. That's not always what you're going to get. And some people sometimes they have a loved one and they're like, oh, you know, if we could just get them into treatment. Sometimes people that are manipulators and bad people stay manipulators and bad people, with or without drugs, with or without alcohol. And I think sometimes that's something you also have to process, you know. So you may not be getting, it's not like an easy, you know, easy bake oven where you throw this person into it, you know, it spends some time in there, they come out and they're a finished product. You know what I mean? That's not how it works for any of us. Even with my story that may seem like a miracle and radical, like, you know, no, I'm 12, almost 13 years into this journey, and the people around me still have to deal with nonsense and silliness and stuff from my past, and I have to get checked on a fairly regular basis. I hope less regular as I get older, but, you know, it's still a regular basis.
That leads into this next question. When in recovery, does accountability for your past kick in? Can I ever expect you to apologize to me, try to make things right, amends, as they call it, for things you said or did to me during your time of addiction?
If I remember it, if I'm aware of it, then that would be part of making amends, as long as it's not, you know, going to create an issue, open up a wound, or, you know, maybe it could get violent. That would be, I think that's part of the responsibility, is at least to try. That's in every walk. It doesn't matter, you know, faith, no faith, like that. That's something that if you've wronged somebody, you can't always, you don't always get the chance to apologize. That's happened with me. Some people that I have wronged don't want to talk to me, and I understand that, you know. So to go try would probably end up ugly. But if it's within your power, yeah. But if it's within your power, yes, you should be trying to make amends with people.
Let's sidestep all of this a little bit. Let's go to the idea of harm reduction. Mm-hmm. Where do you stand, John, on harm reduction? And is abstinence a goal of most harm reduction?
I don't know. I don't know. With harm reduction, I think the goal is to reduce the harm to individuals, whether that's needle exchanges or it gets more, you know. So some of it, I think, is like Narcan. I think all of the Narcan being, you know, distributed across the country has definitely changed the overdose rate. Like, we're starting to see that. So, but yeah, I don't know. I'm not in the, I've done some classes cause I have to, but I'm not really in the harm reduction world, and it can mean a lot of different things. So I think also there may be some things with harm reduction that I understand that's a good idea. There may be other things with harm reduction that it doesn't necessarily make sense to me, but it's not my, department. I'm not teaching classes on these things. Like, I just get the information that I get. I think sometimes it makes sense, and I think sometimes it can, you know, some of the stuff that they're thinking about doing can be a touch silly.
Yep. Yep.
Yeah.
I can agree easily with all of that. As we're working toward recovery, sobriety, what are some of the checkpoints that tell us we're moving in the right direction?
You stop stealing. That's one of my checkpoints. You stop manipulating when you see yourself not lying.
Do me a favor.
Yeah.
Pardon the interruption. I remember one of your stories of, those days of the sticky fingers picking up what didn't belong to you, and you told the story of the Bibles of different colors.
Yes, yes.
Would you share that with the folks?
Yeah, so that, this happened in Anderson, but I think we're outside of the realm of something I can get in trouble for, so... But we started, so my brother, and it's my sister-in-law now, but they were girlfriend and boyfriend at the time. They were going to Anderson University here. And they invited me to this church that was like this rundown school, but, you know, I was still getting high. And the only reason I was going is I wanted my kids, my daughters, to, like, live a better life than me. And I was like, maybe the Jesus thing will work. I didn't believe in any of it. And we would go there, and they had, like, the coffee shop, and... there was people with dreads. It was just a really cool little church, but it was, they didn't have the organized Bibles where they gave them out. They had like this free Bible rack. And every week I was a thief, you know, and every week I would go in there and I would grab a Bible, you know, and then I would take it home and I wouldn't be able to understand it. It was like, I don't. But as I was going, I was getting different colors of Bibles and, you know, I mean, different versions, and I was just stealing Bibles. And one Sunday I went in there and there was this big, huge blue Bible. This thing was like this wide, people, if you're watching. And I looked over and I had walked by the rack, so I didn't grab it when I walked in. And the whole service, I don't know what they preached. I don't know what they sang, nothing, because I was just looking at this Bible. I was like, I don't have a blue Bible. And I definitely don't have a Bible that big. So, like, I'm focused. It's like, I'm getting that bad boy. As soon as we leave, like, I'm snatching this thing up. And so we get done. Everybody's shaking hands. I ain't playing all that. Like, I'm headed to this Bible rack to get this Bible. And I grabbed it. And what's interesting is, so I got home with it, and it was the first Bible that I had got that I could understand, because it was a study Bible. And I got to reading in it, and in it, since I could understand it, I started reading Matthew. And one of the most beautiful things about my story that I don't talk about a lot, because this was before Radical Encounter or anything like that. My house was chaos. Everybody was fighting all the time. There was three kids just running around like nutcases. We were running around like nutcases. And I started reading Matthew, and when I would open up that book and read it, everything around me would calm down. Nothing changed except for internal stuff, but I would read these stories about Jesus. I didn't believe in him. I thought I was reading fiction almost, but as I would read it, there would be a peace in my spirit. So I found myself, and I didn't know what was going on, but I found myself going back to this blue Bible and reading it. And I've never been a reader, never been big into reading, but I just always... when I had a chance, even if it was for 5 minutes, I would get into that Bible and I would feel peace. But that's the blue Bible story.
You know, I just have a question on that. As you look back at that now, was that your desire to, quote, steal another Bible? Or do you think that was God's design to get you in his word?
It could have been both. He could have been using my mentality. And I don't know, like, he may have just, like, had this thing highlighted like you see in the movies or something, like, so I couldn't, like, look away from it. I don't remember it that way, but I think that Bible stayed with me. This Bible stayed with me. I think when I moved and everything, like, you know, I got out with my backpack, this Bible stayed with me, and then I had somebody we were at the gym, and he was about to get married, and he was like, dude, you know, he was going through some stuff, and he was like, I need a Bible I can understand. And I was like, dang it. Because I knew, like, I've got one you can understand, but this is like my dude. Like, this is my ride or die Bible. But I gave it to him. And I just remember, like, when he was driving off, like, I felt good to give him the Bible, but it was also like I was mourning. Like, that Bible was I stole that.
Gave your best friend away.
Yeah. But yeah, that's the, I think that I was meant to have that Bible and that experience because it was starting to introduce me to Jesus. I didn't believe in it, but I was just getting this introduction to this man that eventually would save my life.
Yeah. Okay, let's go back to the original question. Tell you what it was.
Yeah, repeat that, please.
The idea, what are some of the stepping stones along the way to recovery that you can recognize? I'm getting there, and you started off with
I think stop the stealing. I think like when you find yourself like recognizing that you're about to manipulate a situation and not do it. But this is another thing that's different for everybody. For some people, it's getting their permit and license. It's getting their driver's license reinstated. It's getting a job. It's reconnecting with their kids on some level. It's reconnecting with family. It's getting into groups, you know what I mean, and being open and really like working programs that work for them. And so it's going to be a different thing for everybody. I can sit down with somebody and their stepping stone. I never had lost my license, but for some people that's a huge milestone when you start to get those fees paid or you get a reinstatement. For some people, it's like going into probation and not fearing having to pee in a cup, you know, so it's going to be different. There's different little milestones for everybody, but it's good to remember those little milestones of like, oh gosh, I remember the first time, you know, I had like for me, like I had to pee in a cup for a job and I was still stressed because like, you know, I mean, for years, it was not my, you know, you knew that you were trying to beat something or, you know, I mean, there was a chance that something would show up. So it's just, it's different for everybody.
But those are fine examples, and I'm sure they fit not everybody, but many for certain. So let's kind of come up to date. Tell the folks who John Humphreys is today and what he's about, and here's a chance for you to throw in about your podcast.
Yeah, so I hope that people would see me as about my father's business. So that's like, there's that. I'm in Marion and we started a Friday night fire service back up on Friday nights. Our third one will be this Friday. It's been really cool. You know, we just go in there and praise God and we cover messages like prayer and, you know, we're going to cover Holy Spirit, Jesus is Lord, just stuff like that. And people will share their testimonies there.
Is this mainly folks in recovery who are attending this? I'm sure there are.
Not specific to.
Okay.
I think anything I do is going to have a heart of coming out of addiction because that's what me and my team have experienced. But no,
identity.
Yeah. I mean, we'll have college students show up over there that have never done anything, you know, have never touched a drink in their life. I think when you get into the presence of Holy Spirit and God, you know what I mean? We all become, you know what I mean, free anyway. And then so we have that going on. Still doing the school speaking. I think we talked about that the last time. Fentanyl awareness at high schools and middle schools. Still going pretty consistent with that. It's not a cool experience because, you know, parts of it really suck because these kids have been through so much, but it's a honor to be able to be a messenger in that department. I'm working for Core Plus in Grant County. That's a community outreach. And I still work with the courts in Wabash as well. And then we started a podcast called Escaping the Chains Podcast. It's on YouTube, Spotify, and Apple. And it also has a Facebook page and a TikTok. And it's basically, we just do testimonies, like raw testimony interview style. But we also have conversations on there about a lot of different stuff. And it also has the heart of substance misuse and prison time and those types of things, but it covers a lot more. We may have a pastor come in that knows his Bible really well and cover different topics. So, so if you're watching, if you could go like that or follow us on YouTube, we would really appreciate it.
What do you see as one of your next steps, John?
I think doing the things that God's entrusted me with reverence and just keep praying. And I really don't know. I think he's what he's entrusted me with right now. We have to steward well. And so that's what that's what I'm going to do.
The scriptures are clear that if we respond to the little, that, he'll reward us with making it greater.
Yeah. And I'm at peace. So like, if we're doing the stuff we're doing right now, like I have goals and stuff, but like if I look back to where we've come from, it's an honor to be in the space that I'm in. It really is.
We have a question, Eric. Will you share that question with us?
Yeah. Let me get it pulled up. John, where are the girls' mom? Have you always had them with you?
Everybody told me it was impossible. That's another part of the story. Like we were on Escaping the Chains with that testimony. But they told me it was impossible. And I think I got custody of them maybe 11 years ago, but they were with me a year before that. So they've been with me for almost 12 years. I don't really want to tell somebody else's story, so I won't get into what's going on with other family, but they're doing amazing. Remy's a senior. Me and Blaze go to the gym. She squats like 5 times a week. So, they're doing really well. So
good. Good. John, is there anything you want to close this up with? We're getting near our time here. We've given a lot. I've thrown a lot at you. I appreciate your responses. What would you like to add?
Have grace with each other. Their accountability is important. And just get around the people that you see living the life that you want to. And that can solve a lot of things. So it's really it's just really cool to be back in Anderson for this because of the life I lived here for so long. So I'll probably drive around when I leave here and stop by a couple places, maybe do some videos or something. So
the right kind of places, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So, well, folks, thank you. We hope you'll subscribe, you like, you'll get involved with us here. We've enjoyed bringing these interviews to you, the folks we've been able to meet and connect with. John and I have been friends through the recovery work, probably close to 8 years now.
Whenever you guys started, yeah, that first year.
Okay, well, then 10 years.
Yeah.
Because we just celebrated our 10th year, and we've touched base quite often in many ways and been involved together, so we appreciate God's design of that part of the plan, and we trust that you too are seeking that freedom through His Son, Christ. So join us again. We'll be back with you. This will break, other than just being live here. It'll drop on a Friday morning in about 2 weeks. So God bless, take care, and above all, stay in the battle. Amen.
Amen.